You guys sound good. Chris, how you doing?
Pretty good, all things considered. I'm like an NPR show over here.
You have a good voice for NPR.
Thank you.
It's very soothing.
Wait until you see my shveddy balls.
I heard you had the best recipe for those.
Do I?
Hello and welcome to the Cult Cast, the best 30-minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. My name is Airfun Elijah. I'm here as usual with Buster Hine. Hey, Buster.
Hey, man.
We got Alex Heath, Cultamac writer. Alex Heath here with us again today. Hey, Alex.
What's up?
We're going to give Chris Forsman another shot. If you heard our episode 2 episodes ago, we tried to get Chris calling in from a train traveling across the United States, and that didn't work so well. Welcome back, Chris. Chris
Hello.
Is a writer for Ars Technica, and... a sexy man, if I say so myself.
Well, thank you.
And a great dancer for our lady listeners. We have got a fantastic show planned today. Of course, it's just a plan. We'll see how it actually goes. You guys, I thought maybe we could start with a couple of short, quick stories just to kind of get us in the mood to talk all things Apple. Does that sound good?
Mm-hmm. I love getting in the mood.
Okay, let's get in the mood. So, first story, you guys may have heard about this. There's a new database that is being developed by telecom carriers that could render stolen iPhones useless. You guys have all heard about this?
Mm-hmm.
Nope.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you haven't, what? Buster?
No, sorry.
I thought you wrote it.
Nope.
That wasn't you? Well, let me tell you a little bit about it, but... and then I want to tell you a little story about why I think this is so cool. So basically, the idea is that smartphone theft is on the rise, right? And I was just listening to a story on NPR the other day about some lady who was on the subway, and the doors opened, and right before they shut, some scumbag grabbed her phone, ran off the train with it, leaving her sitting there in shock with the doors closing. And of course, he probably sold her phone to... somebody on Craigslist or on eBay. And this has been happening a lot more lately. And so telecoms have decided to create this national database, and all the major telecom providers have signed on, AT&T, I think Sprint and Verizon. And basically what they're going to do is create this database where you can report your phone stolen, and they put it in this database, and then if somebody tries to activate your phone, it can't be activated. It basically renders your phone useless forever. You would think this is something that they would have had for the last 5 years, but previously, and even now, if your phone gets stolen, you're pretty much SOL. There's nothing you could do about it. You could have the unique phone identifier number that they put on all these things, and they literally won't do anything for you. So you can rest easy now, because if your phone gets stolen, you can actually do something about it. I don't know why it took them so long to come out with something like this. It feels like it should have been around 10 years ago, don't you think, Alex?
Yeah. I don't know. I've read reports, you know, for over the last few years. It seems like it's gotten a lot worse now. I just, what you're talking about, the NPR piece, and then I read something else. I think it was on Business Insider, but basically just how... it's become pretty rampant for, you know, especially iPhone theft in major cities like San Francisco and New York. You know, I think what I remember is like, is basically kind of like, you may be in danger if, and it's like the guy's wearing a hood. You're in
a bus. Of course, he's got his hoodie up.
You're walking out. You know, it's like right when you walk out, you know, they'll just kind of just grab it from you and run off, and you know, run off into a crowded street and it's gone.
Yeah, gone forever, and right, but, they can just sell it. Yeah.
And another interesting thing I noticed, I think this is in Business Insider, is they said that the profile that the police are saying, this is kind of unofficial, but the police, according to the site sources, were saying unofficially that the profile of women, at least in San Francisco, that were getting their phones, their iPhones stolen, were Asian women. I don't know what that means, but
maybe they have the least hand strength, so there's like the least amount of risk.
I don't know, but the police unofficially said if you are a middle-aged Asian woman, your chance of iPhone theft is higher.
That's so really funny. Well, let me ask you guys this. Chris, let's start with you.
Sure.
Do you think this is going to be effective? Like, do you think this will be a good way to deter thieves from stealing iPhones?
Well, according to Jenikowski, I mean, this is supposed to be integrated like within like 6 months. So essentially, you know, the scenario that I see, you know, someone brings in like an iPhone to an Apple store or an AT&T store and tries to get it activated, right?
Right.
They're going to go and they can just type in the IME number. And when they do that, the database can just check and see if it's stolen. I mean, you know, it's pretty straightforward. I mean, if the, you know, and if the person is the one doing the stealing, they're going to get busted on the spot. But, you know, at least they can help, you know, track down the issue. The problem now, I mean, this same situation you described is a big problem here in Chicago, too. I mean, people, I guess they wait on the train for the people who are sitting right by the door using their smartphones, and they just grab them and run out the door at the next stop.
It's kind of brilliant, actually. Because, like, what are you going to do, dude?
Did you get an idea?
I mean, I like to steal stuff, but I had never considered doing it in a way where it eliminated me, the chances of me getting chased. You know, it's like now you can literally just run off, the doors closed, you turn around, and you can just stand there and do a little jig while the person's screaming at you behind that glass door.
Yeah. There was a brief, this was the last 8 months or so, but a guy here in Chicago on the Red Line boosted someone's iPhone, ran out the train, ran down the stairs, and knocked over an old lady and killed her.
Wow.
I remember that. I remember reading about that. God.
Yeah.
That's insane. So, you know, I think it's going to suck initially for the people who buy these stolen iPhones, right? Because if you buy an iPhone on Craigslist, there's, at least as far as I know, there's not really a great way besides calling the carrier to check if it's been reported stolen. I don't even know if you can do that with all the carriers. So the people who buy the phones are going to get screwed, at least initially, right? And then it's going to catch on really fast. I mean, once a few people get screwed, everyone's going to know that if you buy a stolen phone, it's basically going to be worthless. So I think it's really going to work well.
I mean, if it, you know, not only can it, will it cut down on this kind of theft, which is, you know, it's annoying. It's not the end of the world if your phone gets stolen, because you can get a replacement, and you know, if you've got any kind of recent backup, all your data is going to be right back there. It's not that, it's not a terrible, you know, loss, but I mean, all, you know, just the added stuff around it, you know, like I said, this lady got killed just because the guy was running away from the train after he stole someone's iPhone.
It's insanity.
Yeah. I mean, all the, you know, it'll just eliminate that whole scenario. So I think it's totally worth it, and you're right. It's been a long time coming.
Oh man, it's been so long. And also in other, it's been a long time coming news. AT&T has finally agreed to start unlocking phones that are off contract. I should say specifically iPhones. So for some reason, for the longest time, and then you'll especially think this is good if you're a traveler. You go to AT&T, you want to get your phone unlocked, right? Your contract's expired. There's really no reason why they should keep your phone locked, you know, besides the fact that they want to make more money off you. Because, of course, if you unlock it, you can take your phone to Italy, you can take your phone to France, you can take your phone anywhere, pop in a new SIM card, boom, and you're ready to go. And you're, you know, paying a dirt cheap rate for local data and local minutes. And previously, AT&T would not unlock your iPhone. They would not do it. I mean, there was no way to get them to do it, you know, sans, you know, getting some really cool young manager who was willing to do it for you. So AT&T has just announced that if you have an iPhone that's off contract, they will unlock it for you so that you can take it anywhere you want to go. Chris, you kind of travel a lot, don't you?
No, actually,
no, you don't.
I really,
you should try it.
I would love to.
And you know, if you do, one of the things you'll immediately learn is that you can get your phone unlocked and get dirt cheap rates. Whereas previously, you would have had to pay AT&T's ridiculous text message rates in other countries.
Yeah,
and they charge like, you know, 50 cents each or something. And you know, in a lot of European countries, especially, you don't even have to pay for incoming text messages. They don't count those against you because you can't control them. They only count text messages that are outgoing.
Yeah, my sister is actually in Scotland for a wedding, for the she's been there. She's going to end up being there something like two and a half weeks. And she was sending me text messages the other day, and I was like, "You realize this is going to cost you like $80, right?"
Yeah, per text. No longer. Well, hey, now that we're loose, now that we have had a chance to get these small stories out of the way, let's move on to a big story of the week. Mm-hmm. And that is Facebook buying Instagram. Now, Alex, I know you recently wrote a piece about this on Cultimac, and I believe the title was, "What Does Facebook Mean for Instagram?"
Mm-hmm.
What does Facebook mean for Instagram, Alex?
Well, essentially, nothing. But I mean, really.
Okay, next story.
But no,
I think it means there's 12 guys who are rich right now.
Yeah, right now it means that there's two guys sharing $500 million and the rest are just taking off the rest of the money. But no, it's Instagram's going to stay the same for a while. I mean, I don't, you know, I think that, you know, they said in their blog post that, you know, that we'll probably start seeing pay filters and stuff like that down the road.
Like Hipstamatic,
like Hipstamatic. You know, Facebook will probably start bleeding into the app a little more, as far as you'll notice that, you know, Facebook is more prominent as far as sharing. But I mean, Instagram is, you can open it today, it's still the same app, and it'll probably be the same app for a long time. I think what's really going to stand the test is what Instagram is like in 8 months.
Right.
You know, after Facebook has, you know, totally assimilated, or I should say Instagram is totally assimilated into Facebook. And, you know, they're going to be running it independently, and that's what Zuckerberg said. But, you know, they did this for a reason. You don't just spend $1 billion for a reason. And so they're obviously going to leverage Instagram as what I would think is their photo backbone. You know, cause, I mean, Facebook is like, it's the YouTube of photos. I mean, there's no other site compares with how many images are uploaded to Facebook each day. And Instagram, you know, they're doing photos right. And I think Facebook's, you know, sweeped in at the right time on this upwards trend for Instagram. They're growing users like crazy. And, you know, it was a great buy. It was a great decision. I just hope that Instagram doesn't change from what it is to something more Facebooky.
Yeah, I hope you're right. You know, one of the things I've heard people talk about is the astronomical price that Facebook paid for this company that, you know, I mean, really doesn't have any way of making money at the moment.
Right.
And some people have kind of guessed that maybe that Facebook did it because they didn't want Twitter to have it. And it actually didn't have anything to do, or not as much to do, with the fact that they wanted to have this amazing you know, photo sharing platform, more, and it had more to do with the fact they didn't want they didn't want Twitter to have this amazing platform, because Twitter and Instagram, I mean, they're already so synonymous with one another, right? I mean, it's like, I don't really feel like Instagram could survive without Twitter, or at least certainly wouldn't be nearly as big as it is, because Twitter is the way you share your Instagram photos a lot of times. I guess you do with Facebook too. I mean, do you think this is kind of a strategic play by Twitter or by Facebook to keep it out of Twitter's hands?
All I remember reading is that Google had kind of knocked on Instagram's door already, and it was just kind of Google and Facebook. That's all I'd read. So I don't know anything about Twitter. I feel like that would be kind of weird for Twitter to buy Instagram. I don't feel like Twitter's in a position to do that. But Facebook is kind of, you know, they're valued at like, what, $5 billion or something like that. They're kind of got a little weight right now, and they need to do something like this. They needed to shake some stuff up. And, I don't know. I think it makes sense. Facebook is going to need to keep Instagram in some key areas so that it doesn't suck in 8 months. And I think the sharing thing, like what you were saying, is how Instagram shares to Twitter and Facebook. That has to be there. Like, you have to, I'd like them to add more services like Google Plus and stuff like that. But I mean,
you still use that?
No, but I'm just saying, just showing that they're keeping Instagram as a tool for sharing and not something that they're just going to assimilate into themselves, so that, you know, you can still share to all your networks on Instagram, and it doesn't become this, you know, marriage with Facebook that you can't escape.
Buster, let me ask you this. You just created a company, it's 2 years old, and you just got $400 million as your cut. What do you buy first? Besides some new Air Jordans, vintage Air Jordans.
A mountain of cocaine, if I was Charlie Sheen.
That's honest.
winning.
But I'm not Charlie Sheen. I probably just, I mean, I just take off for the rest of my life and just travel everywhere.
I would take off for how long? Probably for the rest of my life.
Just say gone out to life. Put it on the door.
Chris, what would you buy?
What's that?
What would you buy if you had just sold your 2-year-old company for, and your cut was $400 million? As it's been rumored that Kevin, is his last name Systrom or Systrom? That's how much he earned from the sale?
I would get a DeLorean. And then I would find a way to add a flux capacitor to it, I think.
I think they sell those on ThinkGeek. Dude, that's like, it's gonna be like $40. You gotta think big.
Well, the DeLorean's not gonna be cheap.
That's true. Actually, you know, the sad part is I think they are kind of cheap. Like Back to the Future makes them look really cool, but from everything I've heard about them, they're like such piece of crap cars that no one actually wants them. And I don't think they're very fast either, because the body's made out of stainless steel.
Yeah. I would buy a Christopher Nolan Batmobile Tumbler car, one of those cars that Christian Bale's rocking.
Oh, right. You'd look so great driving around the streets of Miami in that thing. Dude, I'm just assuming that's where you'd live.
You put the top back, you get a tan.
Does that thing even have a top? I don't know.
It blows up.
It shoots the top button. Like 200 feet into the air.
Yeah, and there's spikes on the edges.
I don't know what I would buy. I think I'd buy a really nice used Honda Accord, maybe like a 2005. But it would have the nicest wheels in all Seattle.
That's what I'm saying. You buy solid gold rims on it.
Yeah.
If you put spinners on those things, I'll punch you in the face.
Yeah, you know, I'm practical. I'd be cautiously spendy. Get something nice, but not too nice. Well, hey, let's move on and let's talk about the thing that everyone wants us to talk about. We of course asked our listeners for some feedback, and thank you for everyone who gave us their suggestions on things they wanted to hear about. And besides hearing more about Ashton Kutcher playing Steve Jobs in his bio movie, which we're probably not going to have time to do again today. Everyone really wanted to hear us talk about MacBook Pro rumors. So let's talk about that, because I'm actually pretty excited about this too. So as the rumor mill goes, in the next 2 to 3 weeks, we are going to see a new MacBook Pro. But there's a twist. These MacBook Pros are supposed to be more air-like, meaning they're going to be lighter, thinner. They're going to have that teardrop shape, faster. And then, of course, there's all sorts of other little features that we're going to talk about in a moment that we might see. But let's talk about why people think they are going to be seeing these sooner rather than later. Intel has the Ivy Bridge processors, and they've just reportedly moved up the launch date of those to April 23rd. Is that right, Chris?
Well, it's such a confusing mess, because originally Intel had been saying for a long time they were going to target the first quarter of this year for Ivy Bridge. Mm-hmm. And then in February, one of their guys over in China was saying, no, we're actually going to have to delay it until June. And there had been some rumors along those lines. So, you know, everybody's like, oh, great. Now, you know, we're going to be waiting 3, 4, 5 more months. But then some leaked product plans came out a couple weeks ago saying that Intel is actually going to stagger it. Several desktop parts and a couple of the higher-end mobile parts were actually going to come out in April. Mm. And then the rest at the end of April, and the rest would be available at the beginning of June. It seemed possible that they have some 45-watt quad-core parts, which would... at least now, as it stands, the 15-inch and 17-inch MacBook Pros are using 45-watt Sandy Bridge processors. So it certainly seems likely that we could see, you know, some high-end 15-inch or 17-inch models come out earlier, maybe the end of this month or maybe the very beginning of May. What doesn't seem likely to me is that we'll be seeing a radically thinner MacBook Pro come out with these parts.
Really? You don't think so?
Yeah. It seems much more likely that if Apple was going to release a thinner 15-inch laptop, that they would have to wait for the 35-watt or parts that are the dual-core parts that are coming out in June.
Hmm.
And one nice feature of Ivy Bridge is that it has this configurable top end on the thermal design power. So, you know, actually, a vendor can configure the processor to you know, don't max out at 35 watts, max out at 20 or 25 or whatever. You know, one scenario we thought about is that, you know, Apple could design it, say, max the processor out at 25 watts when it's running on the battery power, and when you plug it in, max that out all the way to 35 watts because then it's not sitting in your lap, you know.
Oh, interesting.
And burning a hole in your jeans. So, you know, there's a lot of variability there, but the issue is, I mean, you just can't simply take a 45 watt part and then put it into a radically thinner case and expect there to not be any kind of problem. I mean, there's a reason why the MacBook Airs as they are now use 17 watt parts.
Hmm. Well, do you think that when the new MacBook or the new MacBook Pros get released, which I'm lovingly calling the MacBook Pro Airs, since it seems like that's the way Apple's taking them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're still going to be a professional, you know, fast computer, right? They're not going to try and make it a giant MacBook Air. It's going to be a MacBook Pro that looks like a MacBook Air, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I'd agree. That seems like the more likely conclusion. What I would expect is not a radically thinner design, but more evolutionary. I wouldn't be surprised to see Apple start taking off the optical drive. I know that there are some pro users that are going to just lose their mind about that, but you know, I mean, they've already gotten rid of it on the Mac Mini. They've already gotten rid of it on the Air, and we, you know, they've got the Mac App Store. We've seen that the digital distribution is really what's going on here. So, you know, people are buying music through iTunes. I mean, Apple, you know, iTunes is the number one retailer for music in the world. So really, you know, really that's the reality is digital distribution works. Apple's proven it. They can get rid of the optical drive. And for the people who absolutely have to have it, they can get an external one. So I think we're going to see that go away. I think we're going to see maybe Apple shaving a little bit of size and weight, but just a little bit. What they're probably going to do, what I think it would be smarter is, you know, using the extra space for maybe an optional extra SSD, more battery capacity. You know, there's extra, you know, discrete GPU processing power, things like that, that I think are going to keep it a pro
model
device. Yeah.
I think it's a really exciting time to be a MacBook Pro user. Wouldn't you guys agree? I mean, we're on the cusp of getting a much different model, and I totally agree with you. I think the DVD drives are dead. I mean, who uses them anymore? Anytime I talk to anyone about their DVD drive, if they want it, it's just in case they need it, but no one actually uses the damn thing. Mm-hmm. And I think for most people, like, here's the scenario I would love to see. And this is something I've wanted for a long time, and I think we're finally at the point where Apple pulls the DVD drive, gets rid of it, because it's heavy, it takes up a ton of space, right? Because it has to be as big as a CD or a DVD, so they can't shrink it, really. And I would love to see them put some more battery in there. But let me ask you this, Alex or Buster, pipe in here. What do you think the possibility is that we're going to see Apple release a MacBook Pro with a standard SSD, just like the MacBook Air, but then they give you the option of also adding like a 2.5-inch hard drive, you know, so if you wanted to have that storage space, you could, but then you still get the speed. Buster, what do you think?
I think you could see that sometime this year.
Would you buy it?
Would I buy it? Well, I already have an 11-inch MacBook Air, which is really nice because it doesn't take, it's not a lot of weight in my bag. So,
right. I guess that's true.
I wouldn't buy it because I have a desktop Mac Mini as well. So it wouldn't make sense for me, but you know, for a lot of users, yeah, it'd be cool.
Alex, what do you think?
I'm going to be buying whatever they put out because I'm on
fanboy.
because I'm a fanboy and I drink the Kool-Aid. No, because I've got a pretty old MacBook Pro.
What year is it? I didn't buy one.
I want to say it's a 2010. So it's
dude, mine's a 2010 too. Pretty old.
Yeah.
It's true. You're right, but it's just so funny hearing you say
actually,
that.
Actually, you know what? Actually, you know what? It might have been. I might have bought it right at the end of 2009 because I bought it. I bought it on Black Friday, and I don't think I. Yeah, it was 2009. So this is a dual core Intel. So I mean, things have come a long way, and it's going to be a huge jump to go from this to a Sandy Bridge with an SSD. I mean, I can't wait. Yeah.
Well, let me ask you guys.
I'm just saying my 2006 MacBook. Original Rev A, not even 64-bit. It's still running.
It runs.
That's the plastic one, right, Chris?
Yeah.
But Chris, I can't control my NASA stuff with this thing. It's,
yeah.
And do Photoshop and watch Hulu.
You're exporting a movie.
Right. Yeah, you can.
Yeah.
Yeah,
do you know
can.
How hard it is to position a satellite while you're exporting a movie and using Lightroom? It doesn't work. It takes like 3 minutes. Yeah, I don't have 3 minutes.
Old MacBook Pro. Oh my gosh.
Well, let me ask you guys this. One of the big features of Ivy Bridge processors is the possibility that it could enable the new MacBooks to have Retina displays. In fact, Intel VP Kirk Skaugen, I apologize, Kirk, if I said that wrong, confirms that Ivy Bridge makes it possible for PC makers to make Retina display laptops and computers if they choose to. Do you guys think we're going to see a Retina display MacBook Pro Air?
MacBook Pro Air.
In the next 3 weeks? I mean, we're going to see one eventually. That's
in
definite.
The next 3 weeks?
I think they're gonna announce this thing in the next 3 to 4 weeks. Am I wrong?
I don't know if it'll be Retina. I don't know. I'd ask Chris.
Chris?
Yeah.
Chris.
I'm gonna say I don't know if we'll see it.
I knew I invited you on for a reason.
The next couple of weeks, but yeah, I mean, Apple has the support in Lion. There's gonna be even greater support in Mountain Lion, which is set to launch this summer. Is it going to be in the next couple of weeks? Maybe not. Is it going to be sometime this year? I honestly expect so.
Yeah, so you think that maybe the odds of it being the very next model, what do you say? Give me a percentage here and then maybe add 30% to it. What do you think? like 90% chance?
I'm going to say 87%.
That's pretty good. You heard it here first, people.
Wow.
You are definitely going to have a Retina display MacBook Air Pro in your hands in the next 2 weeks.
They're not going to call it the Air Pro.
We've broken the story.
Tomorrow. We're going to have it tomorrow.
It's
actually
going to be released tonight, and by tomorrow morning, you can have it.
Has anybody thought about just MacBook? Like Apple just pulling an iPhone or an iPad?
I think they'll definitely, with like the 11 and 13-inch models, I think they'll definitely be taking off the Air tag pretty soon from those.
I mean, isn't that what Apple wants eventually, to have a unified product line where it's just MacBook? Come in and get your MacBook.
Yeah, you got your MacBook and you got your MacBook Pro.
Yeah, you can come and get your iPhone, your iPad, your MacBook. You know?
Now they got rid of the MacBook.
Yeah, they did. You know, I don't know. I really hope they don't go that route because I don't like the fact they're just calling it iPad. I think it's confusing. But I understand why they did it, but...
MacBook,
you know,
HD.
I really wish they would have just called it iPad 3, but I digress. Yeah, I think they're going to have to call it the MacBook Pro, at least for a while, right? Because there's going to be the Air, and then there's going to be the Pro version. And I think that's a very important distinction for guys like me who edit a lot of photos. I edit a lot of video. I edit this podcast. You know, I'm doing a lot of production work. The big thing that I need to know is that I'm going to have a hard drive, you know, for storage, right? Because, man, I can burn through 30 gigs, no problem, just in photos, let alone video. And also, I need to make sure that it has the more powerful graphics option, which isn't available in the MacBook Air. And I think that's that one item, the graphics, is really kind of a key distinguishing point between the two models. It's like one of them has a really nice, you know, independent graphics processor, not this... You know, Intel HD graphics processor. It's like, that's great for browsing eBay, But it's not. It's not going to get a real man's work done. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, real men browse Amazon. Yeah, so
real men use Amazon, and they need an independent graphics chip, even if they're not ever going to use it. They need to have the option. You guys hear me? You feel me on that?
I feel you.
Okay, thank you.
I smell you.
Feeling you right now.
One last question about the MacBook Pros before we move on. Do you guys think we're going to see it with an SSD only? Or hard drive only option? Like, do you think that Apple's going to just make the jump and say, hey, no more hard drives, it's just going to be SSD? Or do you think we're going to see the hard drive stick around for a while?
I really like Chris's idea of them using the space for the disk drive to, like, give you the option at least, or maybe just put some other stuff in there. But, like, say, you know, you can have another hard drive here. That would be a good pro option. That would be a good way to differentiate the pro from the Air.
Yeah, I like that too, but I just want to point out that was actually my idea, but go ahead. Chris said it first. Chris said it first, but I was thinking it. Chris, what were you saying?
Okay.
Well, I'd say one of the most common mods for a MacBook Pro is to get one of those adapters and throw in an SSD where the optical drive used to be, pop it out and I'm sure you guys have seen these.
Oh, yeah,
you can get one from iFixit and MCE and OWC, all that have these kind of things. So I think it's really smart. What I'd like to see Apple do, what I think would be a smart move, is for them to use these SSD modules they're using in the Airs as the main boot drive.
Right.
I mean, that's just going to be, you're going to get a 128 or 256 boot module, and then you're going to have an empty slot, or maybe depending on you get the good, better, and best, version. Maybe it comes with a 500 gig or 1 terabyte hard drive in there. If that's an option you need or want.
Gotcha. But I mean, do you guys really like the idea that you're at this point now you're buying an appliance, right? It's like, it's something that can't be upgraded. I mean, you buy a 128, let's say you buy the 64 gigabyte MacBook Pro Air, mm-hmm. and then you use it for 2 weeks and you're like, this isn't enough space. Like, what do you do? What are your options at that point?
OWC makes replacement modules.
But I thought the modules were like soldered on to the MacBook Air boards.
Nope.
They're not? Nope. You can pull them out?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You're lying to me. Are you? No, the
RAM is soldered, but not the SSD.
I've
swapped it out myself. I've done the swap.
And so you just yank it out, toss new. It's just like changing the RAM.
Uh huh.
Oh,
in fact, OWC just released earlier this year. I saw them at Macworld,
mm-hmm.
or is it CES? I went to both and saw them both. I don't know. It could be both.
And they were like right next to each other too.
Yeah. But they have now, they finally, and this is the thing I complained about, I did the swap last year in my older MacBook Air, but now they have a little external enclosure you can get that you can slide that module into and use it, use the one that was stock as a extra drive.
Huh.
So you're not just tossing, this $200 hunk of flash memory.
Who cares? We're writers. We make so much money. It's like we don't need to keep that crap around. Just throw it in the garbage.
Well, I don't know how you guys do it at Cult of Mac, but
we're rolling deep.
I just bought a pimp suit.
Yeah, you were at the beginning of the show. Alex just bought a pimp suit.
I mean, shoe.
Yeah, he's like, give me the pimp suit model. Well, hey,
we get paid by the motherland.
That's right. Google AdSense. Dang. Hey, let's wrap up with this last story. I want to talk about Flashback. It's the virus that you've probably heard about that's been going around from Mac to Mac, and it makes your Mac explode and shoot aluminum shrapnel into your body parts. Alex, you probably know the most out of the three of us. Actually, Chris might know a lot, too, about Flashback. Probably. Can you tell us what Flashback is and why we should care about it?
It's this botnet, which is basically a botnet is just a chain of computers that have been unknowingly shackled against their will to this greater master who is using them to get web hits and generate money. And so I mean, it's this, you know, this security research firm posted another report a week ago saying like 600,000 Macs are infected by Flashback. And apparently a large concentration of them were, interestingly, in Cupertino, California, which is the home of Apple HQ, which I think is kind of funny. And I don't know how I believe that, because I feel like Apple would know what's going on. But most of the infections were concentrated in North America, and there were a few in some other countries, but it's pretty much all North America. And I mean, relatively, 600,000 Macs is not a big number compared to how many Macs there are. And you know, it's a Java vulnerability, so you're going to get it in your browser.
How would you even get it? Do they figure out how people are contracting it?
Pardon my lack of technical terms here, but I think basically what would happen is a fake certificate or a fake login would be given through a Java applet, and so you would click through and it would install something on your machine unknowingly, and I think you would have to give your password. I'm not sure, but I think so. And Apple's released a couple Java updates to combat this already, and they just actually released a final one today that they said they were going to, that actually detects and removes Flashback. So if you have it on your machine and you haven't already gotten rid of it, this latest Java update and software update will take care of you. But previously the only way to make sure you didn't get infected was to disable Java in your browser.
So you basically would get it by browsing, as Leander would say, naughty websites. Right.
Not really naughty. Java is used for things like
naughty.
Well, I mean, Java is used for things like online chats. So yes, there are plenty of naughty online chats. You've got chat roulette. You've got things like online games. A lot of online gaming is done with Java applets.
But isn't it always the sites that are somewhat naughty that is where you get the stuff? Like, you're either trying to download a torrent, or you're trying to browse adult streaming website. I mean, you're not going to get it from going to eBay. You're not going to be on Amazon and get it. It's like the less reputable websites.
So wait, if Cupertino had like a large amount of, you know, people with the virus, does that mean Cupertino people at Apple are doing naughty things on their computer? That's what I want to know. That's the real story there.
we just discovered the real story.
I've heard that individuals browsing is pretty well tracked by Apple security.
Oh, so, man, I bet you it is. The Microsoft domain, you get escorted out and people in white dress.
No, I think they just flick you behind the ear.
Yeah. Oh, you're using Google Plus? Oh, I'm sorry.
I don't even think they'd punish you for that. You'd be like, why are you using that?
It's its own punishment.
Yeah.
Zinger.
We're not even going to discipline you. You can just continue using it. Well, hey, guys, we are out of time for this week. What a good cult cast that was. Thanks, Chris, for being on.
Thank you for having
me. I'm glad this time we actually got to keep you on the entire show.
Yeah.
It was
a real treat.
It was really pleasant. And we got to hear complete sentences from you, which I also liked. Hey, Chris, if we wanted to hear more from you and all the wonderful things you have to say, you're on Twitter, right?
I am on the Twitters.
Okay, and you're just Foresmac, Foresmac.
Yep.
Okay, so if you want to follow Chris, please do. Ars Technical writer, Chris Forsman. And of course, Alex, you're on Twitter also. You're Alex E. Heath, is that correct?
That is correct,
Armando. And that's just H-E-A-T-H.
Yes, like the candy bar.
Right. Ooh, I love those candy bars. And then Buster, you are BST3R, short, sweet, and clever.
You know it.
Mine's pretty simple. I'm just at Erfon, E-R-F-O-N. And of course, if you would like to follow Cult of Mac, we have tons of great tweets going out every day about stories and tips and topics. And I can think of some other T words I probably shouldn't say. And that's just Cult of Mac. Thank you for listening to the CultCast. CultCast is the best 30-minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of the CultCast come out every Thursday night. We will see you guys next time.
Toodaloo!
Bye! Ha!
You just bought a pimp suit? That's cool.
Yeah.
Alex, stop buying pimp suits.
I'm serious, though. It's like white on white.
White on white?
I think I used to have that suit.
It's not.
I think I wore it to prom.
It's not full on white on white. It's like, it's kind of grayish. It's like cream.
So, dude, what is this suit for?
It's just, yeah, why I needed one.
Suits? You just needed a white suit?
I needed
suit?
One.
Needed a pimp suit to walk around.
Wait. You live in Kentucky, right?
Yeah.
Well, coincidentally,
and you're going to be wearing a white suit?
I mean, listen.
You're
going to
carry a bucket of chicken with you, too?
No. Listen. I just.
Yeah, the cave works.